Good evening, folks. Welcome to the Monday Night Big Footy Tiger Cast. Hope you're doing well and enjoyed your bye week. Always nice to have a week off during the season. Not sure about the 2,500 weeks that we have currently, but yeah, I wouldn't mind, just to kick things off, I wouldn't mind just the one bye week. Go back old school, pick a week in the middle of the year. Everyone has the same week off and we get stuck into it. But I'll get your thoughts on that as we go around the room. Welcome, Grok. How are you, mate?
Yeah, good to be back, mate. Before we get started, massive thank you to everyone for their comments last week and well wishes. I read those in chat, very much appreciated. But yeah, glad to be back.
And CB, welcome back, mate. Hope you're doing well.
Yeah, thank you, mate. Had a bye week last week and come back, but I've been told my beard game was shit, so I bought back the old half-eaten skunk for winter.
You've joined the club. It's good.
Mate, it is so bitter. It's not wet. It's just bitter and cold here in the Latrobe Valley. I've got, like, the mornings are in the minus, and it's pretty wild, mate. I need this, and now, as you can see, I'm lacking a bit of foliage up top. It's pretty fresh. I need something.
Yeah. What kind of temps are you running with in the morning when you get up? Minus 3?
It's like minus two. It's
Jesus.
Crazy. Today the fog didn't lift till nearly midday. It was wild. It was
minus 1.5 here at like 6 a.m. when I got up for a shower.
We're heading into like ice on the car territories now, so that's not good. Tiggs is not able to join us tonight, but he said he's going to be on next week. But I was texting back and forth with him just about a couple of things, so maybe we'll talk about that a little bit later. I suppose, first of all, I do want to get your guys' thoughts on the buys in totality. Do we, two-part question, do we have too many buys as it stands right now? And should, what would your preferred format be going forward if it's not the current one?
I definitely think there's too many buyers. I think you've hit it on, I think you've hit the nail on the head. I think it should be two buy. If they're going to continue with the opening round, there should be, you know, five games week one, opening round, four games week two, and then halfway through the season, say round 12, 13, then you take those five sides, have a bye, then the following, the other sides have a bye. That way everyone has the same amount of games before the bye, same amount of games afterwards, and play it that way. Otherwise, because there were periods this year where teams are already having their second bye and others hadn't even had their first one yet, which is crazy to think how that can happen in a scheduling. So, yeah, I definitely think there's too many buyers.
I'll just answer Greg Kerr, just above Peter Adams there.
Yep.
Look, my kids are involved. We're involved with the Traralgon Football Club, the Maroons, Mighty Maroons, and I'm actually president of the Gormandale Tigers Cricket Club, believe it or not. I actually run that club. So you almost got the Gormandale connection there, but just wrong season. So, yeah, thought I'd answer that one. To be honest, I'm that frustrated and disillusioned with the corporate product that is AFL currently that I literally watch Richmond games, very minimal other games, and I'm more interested in local football, if I'm honest with this. So I couldn't give a shit if they have four buys in there because, to be honest, you hear, like, Laura Kane, I'm sure we could do a whole segment on Laura Kane and how she's a mindless shrill. When you hear Brown, the CEO of Collingwood, talking to bring back Andy Demetrio to replace Richard Goyder, when you think about the Essendon, you know, the drug side and everything that Andy D, all the damage he did to the game, and you hear all these things and they're all ticking off the umpiring decisions, which is just atrocious, and it telling us the four umpires are working and it's not, and you just... I couldn't care. I could not give a shit, to be honest. Last weekend was great. I went and watched Traralgon Warrigal. Great game on YouTube. I watched a bit of Bairnsdale Morwell, which was a fantastic game, sorted out by 4 points on YouTube. I couldn't give a shit about this corporate game and the bullshit that they are bringing in. Isn't it amazing? Sorry to go on a rant here, lads. You triggered me on this. Isn't it amazing to think that now all of a sudden Grant Thomas, Matthew Richardson, even Kane Corns, they are picking up on these changes to the game, which actually changed the fabric of the game that no one asked for. The brainchilds of Stephen, we'll just call him Shocking, shall we?
Yes.
666, no good. Who would have thought when you start off with 666, you've automatically got 12 blokes in the forward 50. You've automatically got congestion. It hasn't freed up shit, to be honest with you, right? 666, stand, absolute garbage. The rule no one asked for. I mean, how was the goal that Jeremy Cameron kicked on Friday night when old mate went round? The guy on the mark has to stand there like a stuck piece of shit, and Cameron gets to jog around him and bloody kick a goal. It's a farce. Absolute farce and bullshit. And nominating Ruckman. Umpires, we've got four umpires. They can't count to two?
Exactly. Like,
come on. I mean, for Christ's sakes, let's get the game back to an adult's game and stop this Mickey Mouse bullshit.
I mean, you know it's bad when you've got a notorious Richmond hater in Brad Johnson saying that the game was much better when we were playing it between 2017 and 2020 than it is now after the rule changes. And he hated the way we played when we were playing that style of football. He thought it was dirty and congested. But look at the game now. We play, like, people think our game plan was all about, you know, scrappy ball and everything. Take a look at what the game's like these days. It's 10 times scrappier, 10 times more congested. It's just ridiculous.
It's low-scoring basketball between the arcs.
I mean,
who was that Twitter account that we followed that had the statistical data about the average points per game for the last however many years? I can't remember. Something Higginbottom, I think it was. It is not improved at all. So the data's now there and people are now starting to pick up on it.
Yeah, well, Grant Thomas came out and put out a stat saying over the last like 10 years, the average goals per game has been the same, about 13, dipping down to 12. I think it dipped down to 10 in, like, obviously 2020 with COVID. But for all the rule changes, and I think there have been 9 different rule changes in since 2020, it's the scoring hasn't improved despite everything that they say. We want to speed the game up. We want to increase scoring. If anything, it's gone the other way. It's becoming a lot more defensive.
Correct.
Yeah, exactly.
And,
the coaches always find a way around it as well. And I think the frustrating part is a lot of these, or both of those rules, are on record as being brought in to curb the influence of our players when they were at the peak of our powers. And it's not actually improved the game. And yeah, I think they just need to scrap it and get a bit old school. And someone made a really good point before that with all these new rules, interpretations and things like that, I think they are actually making it more difficult for the umpires to officiate. It needs to be more, we've said it before, it needs to be more clear cut and black and white, because not having four different interpretations of a rule is just never going to be a good thing to have. So, but anyway, it is what it is. I can't see him changing it though, can you?
It's so easy. I might be a bald-headed flog with a shit beard on TV right now, right? But I can tell you, limit the interchange, put it down to 3 on the bench, right? Less rotations, 3 on the bench, it will sort itself out, scoring will improve, and get rid of all the other bullshit.
Yeah.
And 3 umpires, that's all you need. Seriously.
It's pretty simple.
Scoring will also improve once they start paying incorrect disposal a lot more as well. I mean, people are saying we don't want umpires getting involved, but I guarantee if they penalise every single incorrect disposal where players just let go of it in a tackle, scoring will go up as well.
Yeah.
Just quickly from Nick, EJ's going well. EJ's going well. So, he had a couple of rants about certain things that happened in the games over the past couple of weeks, but hopefully we get to see him back on sometime in the near future. But no, EJ is going well. So he does listen every Tuesday on his drive. He does listen, so shout out to EJ.
He's even arguing with a Carlton dickhead on Twitter. Oh, I've noticed. He's getting edgy. He's just getting a bit edgy.
Which Carlton dickhead are we talking about?
There's a few of us. There's the main one. I won't even say their name, but the main one you all would have seen who cannot comprehend or understand the most basic of things. Even as big as the Twitter algorithm, he doesn't quite comprehend. But anyway, he knows his shit. We'll leave him be.
Why would we put him on the show?
If he was being reasonable, I would have done it just to see how it went. But there's no comprehension at all. So it wasn't worth the time. He just wanted to be a troll, I suppose.
His Twitter's going to get bombarded.
I know. It's kind of disappointing that Lynch is now out, because it would have been quite fitting if Lynch got a couple of real shockers in front of goal. But on the Lynch front, are we the only team who's come out of a bye with a hamstring injury? It just seems very Richmondy. I do remember seeing him come off the ground in the Hawks game, and I thought, shit, that's not good. I noticed Jack Graham specifically grab his hamstring, so I wasn't too surprised there. But the Lynch one, I was like, that's not good. And a few people tried to say it was maybe game management and things like that, which I could kind of understand. It just didn't sit right with me. And then here we are today finding out that, a mild hamstring on the opposite leg to what he has previously injured. So I don't know how much of that is a conditioning issue, given it's not a reoccurrence of an injury. But what actually alarmed me was Richmond's tweet saying that it'll be about 2 weeks, even though he's already had a week off in the bye week to start getting over it. So I kind of feel like we might be looking down the barrel of 4 to 5, but absolutely. Not good news.
Like, he looked very proppy coming off at the Hawthorn game. I saw him running off as well, and he looked pretty uncomfortable. But, like, again, what is it with us bringing players back and they re-injure themselves in their first game back after an extended layoff? It just raises question marks on conditioning. And at this point, I think we're going to have to start bringing guys back through the VFL. They can't get through more than one or two games without breaking down again. I mean, Gibkiss went down in his second game back. Prestia two or three times this year, plays one game on return from injury, he's out. Graham, now Lynch. It's becoming a bit of a theme for this season. But yeah, the about 2 weeks, as you mentioned, is concerning, because factor in last year with his foot, it was about a 6 week injury.
And they're saying it's minor, and he's already had 1 week off. So we're already looking at 3 weeks minimum for a minor strain.
Yeah.
So I don't know, Steve. Yeah, Grok and Steve. It's
if it looks like bullshit
and smells like bullshit, what are the odds the club's just telling us bullshit, boys?
Yeah, 100%. The one thing I don't like is if he did it in the Hawthorn game and he's already a week in, like, why didn't we announce it last week? Why has it come out? There's something weird, in my opinion, about the timing of that as well.
And I suppose looking at his overall games played, he's played 8 games in the last 2 seasons, which is not good at all for your big key forward. And whether we like it or not, there is a heavy reliance upon him for our game plan to function at its peak capacity with him being in the side, because it's a pretty key pillar of the team and the game plan. So 8 games in 2 seasons, CB, is not ideal. But the million-dollar question then becomes, I don't think we're jumping at shadows by even talking about this, but the million-dollar question becomes, where to from here? Do you keep assisting? Do you look for other options? At what point do we have to start making some big, big calls about our future? Because at the moment, our forward half is obliterated.
Well, without going too deep into things, because I don't want to steal Tig's thunder or Grok's thunder, but the reality is there is a little mini clone out coming at the end of the year. That's happening. I won't go into details on that, but I don't know if I can talk about it. We are keen. There is a young forward that we are keen on in Victoria in the coming up in the draft. It's just a question of if one of our players goes like a Baker, are we going to use that secondary pick so that we get on that kid and go for the best mid with our first? Who knows? I'm going to upset some punters with my ins and outs this week and what I suggest. So for the immediate this weekend against Carlton, but at the end of the day, there's going to be some retirements. There's going to be a few shuffled on. And if we do not have an inquiry into our medical team and into our strength and conditioning team at the end of the year, I will absolutely spew up.
Yeah, there's a mass clean out coming in that department. The club's been asking questions over the last 12 months in regards to, like, injury management and fitness and conditioning. Obviously, that's like fitness and conditioning. Like, we haven't been able to run games out even last year. We were tiring. But
there it is. There it is, Grok. There it is.
Yeah. For 1 year, like, because if we draft Jonty Fall in the draft, the forward from the Rebels, he's not going to be ready to go. Like, you're not going to, we're not going to do to him what the D's did with Jack Watts and throw him straight to the Wolves. Like, it's suicide for a forward to do that, especially with no protection around him. So someone coming in for Lob coming in for 12 months, again, allow Samson Ryan another year to develop. He's pretty solid around the ruck, around the ground, can go forward, gives us relief with Cozzy and Lynch and everything. So yeah, again, I'm not completely against it as long as we can get it for cheap. But I mean, I saw RFC Center mentioning about, you know, we sourced players and then went with Cozzy. I mean, I think we saw in the Hawks game that a Lynch Cozzy combo could work. Lynch took the tall defender and Cozzy was leading up, and I think it was the third quarter where he looked pretty good. He was running, leading up to the ball, which is what we wanted him to. Now, when Cozzy was playing as the number one target, he was getting double teamed. He couldn't use his athleticism to run and jump at the ball, which made him ineffective. But once we've got that big forward around him, he actually looked decent. But yeah, I think that forward line is a massive, massive concern. Obviously, you know, LaFau coming back, Lynch, question marks are there. Does he go on or not next year, even if he is contracted? Like, there's some serious question marks that are going to be happening on Blair Hartley and Toshe.
Because I suppose we don't really have any other young forwards coming up through the rank either, which is the concerning part. So there's a part of me that does feel like there's a trade target in mind to fix the area, because I feel like our back line is pretty well stocked for the next 8 to 10 years. The midfield's not too bad, but forward line, we're either having to swing someone like Bolter or Gibkiss down there, or we're, you know, putting all of our hopes into the Samson Ryan basket, which I'm not sure is a wise move. We just don't have that next out and out genuine big beastly forward that we need for our game plan, is more to the point. So yeah, not sure what we're going to do there. I know a lot of people say Bale's not a big key forward. He'll be able to play a role there, but he's not going to be a Tom Lynch replacement. And that's, I think, what we're kind of looking at is Lynch's body going to be able to hold up to get through how many games next year? Because, yeah, 8 games in 2 years is not great numbers. He's only getting older and the injuries may only become more frequent. So, and if he keeps going down, LaFau's not coming back until halfway through the year with his knee injury, where there's not much else happening down there.
Just on Kaczynski's game last against the Hawks, in a game where we got absolutely pantsed, as a tall, he was there. He took the third most marks. So Miller took 12 grabs, Bolter took 9, and Kaczynski actually took 5 grabs. So
all of them were contested too. Took some really solid clunks.
Correct, and he kicked 1-1, and he should have kicked 2 straight. We all agree on that, right? But the reality was, as a key forward, you're actually right, Grok. He actually presented, and he went okay. He had 12 disposals all up. So, I don't know. We can judge him pretty hard. I mean, I think it appears we can't seem to play when Dustin Martin's out. Noel Cumberland gets a shot; he plays well. As soon as Dusty's back in, Cumbo looks lost and does not seem to have a good game. It seems like we can't seem to play Cumbo and Dusty in the same teams. Thoughts?
I mean, there was a stat where games that Dusty plays for Richmond, where I think it was like 0 and 12 now. And obviously the games that Dusty hasn't played this year, the 2 games that we've won, he didn't play against Sydney and he didn't play in Adelaide. Whereas normally you'd say that back in peak Dusty, those stats would be the other way around. If Dusty didn't play, we're likely to lose 11 or 12. Whereas, yeah, I think Dusty is at the point now where he knows he doesn't have to do everything. And I think that's evident now with the fact that he's passing things off, which is why I'm glad that he nailed that shot, that first goal against the Hawks, because even this year, the first 8 or 9 weeks, Dusty would have passed that off. There's no way he would have backed himself in to go for it. So I think there's a bit of sense of occasion in regards to Dusty taking that shot. But yeah, I think I'm sort of torn because Cumberland, again, is one where his future's unclear. Does he have what it takes to be a consistent performer week in, week out, like Dusty was for us? Or are we better off playing Dusty, who we know what we're going to get out of him? So, again, we're in a lucky position that we don't have to make these calls.
Yeah, lots of things to consider, isn't there? And I'm liking all the different opinions and point of views flowing from the chat as well. It's the beauty of, you know, we've all got the same passion at the forefront of our mind, but there's different ways, I suppose, and different ideas that people have, which is good.
And that's a great point by Stay Tuned. I think we've been lucky to have Jack Riewoldt. I mean, I think we've got a little bit of a recency bias in regards to comparing our forwards to Jack Riewoldt and to a lesser extent Richo. They're not all going to be absolute champions. As long as, again, like their 2017 premiership side, there's not going to be that many guns in it. As long as we can find forwards to play a role like we have with LaFau, like we have with, a lot of the younger players, Campbell, and everything like that, that's all that matters. We don't need an out-and-out A-grade forward. We just need someone who's going to compete.
Just on Greg Kerr's comment there about Grimes, Lynch, Dusty, etc.
Yep.
Grimes will go, Lynch will play on, Dusty 50-50, Short's going nowhere, Prestia 50-50, Graham, we've heard that he has been asked to explore options.
Yep.
And yeah, Baker, well, that's documented. He's had a very good offer west.
Yeah, three of them will definitely be gone.
Yeah,
from what I've heard. Grimes, Prestia and Graham apparently all gone. Short, again, we're looking at potentially trading him to someone like North. Someone who needs a bit more experience in their back line, someone who values a bit of ball movement. I've heard Geelong have made some talk, and I'll be absolutely spewing if I ever see Shorty running around in blue and white hoops. That would disgust me. If we can get a late second rounder for Shorty, I think at this stage we've got to bite the bullet because we've got, you know, Tom Brown coming in. We've got Caleb Smith, who's currently not getting a game, who looked pretty solid in his first little outing. Yes, he was overawed, but again, his ball use was fantastic. I mean, we're at the point now where a lot of the older guys who are getting to the, you know, 29, 30-year-old mark, we need to start cycling them out. We need to start pumping the games into those younger kids. So if we can get something in the vicinity of a pick in the 30s to low 40s for sure, I think we jump on that.
Just on the Bolton talk, the club has told him he's a required player. He'll be going nowhere.
So my first thing is I'm torn on Short. I know he's a bit of a stinker, but I wouldn't mind giving him another run at it next year. But I can understand if it's a good offer, we take it. On the Baker and Bolton thing, was there actual footage of them at said clubs, or is this all like there was of Jack Graham a couple of years ago at Port Adelaide? There was actually photos and footage, or is it just what that newspaper was reporting? Does anyone know? I haven't seen anything. I'm not sure if anyone else has seen anything. So all I'm, I suppose, flagging is maybe don't necessarily believe everything you see and read from mainstream media. I asked Tiggs about both of these players again today while I was messaging about tonight's show. And he said the Baker stuff, from what he believes, it was more about the manager going over there to officially decline the offer. Thanks, but no thanks. And Bolton is contracted to 2027. And basically, unless we get a ridiculous offer, like two firsts and a player, something batshit crazy like that, we're not really open to the idea of trading him.
Yeah.
He might say he wants to go home and then be homesick or whatever it might be. I don't know. I wouldn't be fully sold that they met if it was just an article without any footage or images to back it up.
Yeah, in Europe, everyone's got a phone.
Yeah, surely. Yeah. I'm still waiting to hear back from my source. But apparently, Bolton was there. I've heard from a couple of people. I know he was definitely in WA, catching up with family. As I mentioned to you guys off air, there were reasons why Bolton has sort of gone to the club about potentially moving back. But Yeah, I know Bolton's definitely in WA. Whether or not he met with Freo and West Coast, I've heard.
And this is the thing, like Bolton always a good chance to go back to Perth in his break because he's from there. And it kind of just feels like that some media see him there and put one and one together and get three. It's like they just, yeah, jump at shadows. Like until there's photographic evidence that he was there, like you said, CB, there's a shitload of phones and cameras these days. It would have been quite easy to capture him on the way out. It's a bit of a doozy.
To be fair, though, I think clubs and players are a bit shout out old good old PJ from way back.
It's a doozy.
But I think clubs and players are a lot smarter in hiding these things. You don't want to get caught with your pants down like Geelong did with the whole Travis Boak thing, you know, about 10 years ago where they flew to Adelaide. Connor, no, it's not Brookvale Union. It's a monster. Energy drink. I've had an absolute horrible week's sleep because of this ankle. I'm a side sleeper. I sleep on my left side, and it's my left ankle that I've actually fractured. So every time I roll over onto my left side, my ankle bone digs into my mattress, and it's extremely painful. So I'm waking up four or five times throughout the night, and yeah, had a shit night's sleep. So,
hey Grok, I'll get you some Compound V. Hey,
Compound V. Yeah, that'll heal me. Just don't want the brain damage to go with it.
It's a TV show reference, folks. It's an in gag. Yeah. What else you got for us, Michael? Come on, I'm on fire tonight.
Before we get into the game itself, I did put out a very late tweet and Facebook post asking for people to submit their "Now hear me out" because we've just generated a segment from CB's text messages that he fires off, which is very good. So I appreciate everyone sending through their "Now hear me out." I'll read out a couple. So from Twitter first, from RFC Center. "Now hear me out. We should move Daniel Rioli into the midfield / forward role like North have done with Sheasel to good effect." Thoughts?
Not against it, because we've got the one thing we seem to have is a shitload of defenders. So it's the rest of the year to work it out.
As a midfielder, yes. As a forward, absolutely not. We saw what he was like in the premiership years as a forward, where he had one real great back end of finals campaigns in 2019 and then really couldn't get into the game as a forward. I think he's much better taking the ball on as opposed to waiting for the ball to come to him. So Rioli as a defender or as a midfielder, as a forward, absolutely not.
So I'm scrolling through. From Lockie on Twitter, "Now hear me out, getting two first rounders for Bolton would leave us better off as a team than keeping him for the next 7 or 8 years.
100%.
I mean, if a club came with an offer, you'd be happy to take it?
As someone, I love Shay, don't get me wrong, but again, he's what, 26 now, 27? There's still a massive gulf between his best and his worst games. He's one of these ones where I think he's going to suit a premiership contender much more than he's going to suit us. He's sort of like a cherry on top player that you use to complement rather than build around.
Should we put something out controversially on the show that we thought was bullshit, or I thought was bullshit, but it might have some type of legs? I understand there's a lot of water to go under the bridge, but just should we put something out about a certain young fella that may want to come back, and we weren't labelled as one of the clubs that was interested, but we may have a stake in it.
Is this from West Coast?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think all we need to mention is West Coast and a young kid, and I think people can put one and one together, sort of like the media have done with Bolton. Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt that we're absolutely keen on Harley Reid. There's like we'd have to have rocks in our head. And if it came down to having Bolton on the list or getting enough picks in to trade to West Coast for Harley Reid, I'd much rather Harley Reid on the list, because he's the type of player that his best and his worst games aren't going to be as big as what Bolton's is. He's going to be that hardworking midfielder, wins his own ball and can go forward, as opposed to that flashy outside runner who relies on X factor and speed. So, yeah, if it comes down to Bolton on the list or two first rounders and we can send to West Coast for Reid, give me Reed.
Now, let's be very clear. No one is saying that we're getting Reed, and I think I would be very safe to assume that every other team in the comp, until he puts pen to paper, will be asking the question of his management on a weekly basis. But if you're going to go after a player like Bolton, who's contracted till 2027, you've got to cough up. And I dare say that we would be ballsy enough to try and throw that in as part of the workings if he was looking to come back to Melbourne. So, but everyone will be after him until he signs, realistically.
But just to answer Peter's question, he just said, like, why would Harley Reid want to come to us? There is reporting that he may want to come back to Melbourne. And the thing is, I think the AFL is very wary after the Horn Francis situation between North Melbourne and Port Adelaide. I think the AFL is very mindful about how that played out. And obviously they wouldn't want this to play out quite the same for Harley Reid and West Coast. But I mean, I'm like Michael said, I'm sure there's like 17 other clubs inquiring, or at least what the 10 Victorian clubs would be inquiring. But given that we've got two players that may want to go back west and they happen to be absolute superstars, might put us in a bit of a better bargaining position than clubs with picks when we've got ready-made guys ready to go. So that's why we might be able to satisfy the needs of West Coast more so than other clubs.
Absolutely. There's one big factor as well. And I know it's a massive running joke on Bigfooty about posters on walls, but Reed has actually admitted that he had pictures of Dusty on his wall. He's always modelled his game after Dusty, admires him so much. So jumping at the chance to play with arguably the greatest player of the modern era, like, why wouldn't he jump at the chance? If he had a chance to play with his childhood idol, why wouldn't you? That's got to be worth something to Reed. Imagine Dimmer. We get the biggest shiny new toy in the league.
That's what Peter Adams again says. Why would he come to Richmond? Well, the kid travelled over to Western Australia to an absolute shit truck called West Coast Eagles. They haven't done too much in the last couple of years either, mate. So I don't know.
Stranger things have happened. All we can do is ask the question.
To be fair with that, though, he didn't really have a choice once they called his name.
Yeah, exactly right. Mm. But he was prepared to do it. He didn't stonewall or put conditions on, did he? So,
all right, next one I've got from Go Tigers. Now, hear me out. Season done. Start resting senior players. Keep the old guys at home for interstate games and target pick one. Tanking is rewarded. Let's play the game.
Agree. So this goes to another thing. Back in the more tribal days, the wooden spoon was a thing of shame and lots of mirth for everybody else. And I've endured a couple of them. I've got to say now, after the three flags and everything else, I couldn't give a shit if we finish on the bottom. Use the system and get the picks you need to rebuild, because Tasmania's coming and they're going to compromise the draft in 2 years. You would have absolute rocks in your head not to get the best picks into your club in the next 2 years. And that will be the problem that's going to confront Port Adelaide, Geelong, other clubs. We're already ahead of clubs. Our window's closed, yes, but we're ahead because we've got games into about 7-8 kids already this year to get the ball rolling. And if we bring in that talent, why wouldn't you get the number one pick? You'd have to have rocks in your head not to take it. Just for stupid pride. As Marcellus Wallace said to Butch, you know, Butch in that scene in Pulp Fiction, slight sting in the back of your mind. It's pride. Still go down in the fifth, right? Like,
and I think we, as you said, we've set up pretty well with the amount of picks that we've got this year. Although typical corrupt football league trying to screw us out of the picks that we have for the trading. But I think the fact that we invested so heavily in the draft over the last 2 or 3 years has really held us in good stead. Obviously, we had that draft where we got obviously Gibkiss, we got Brown, we got Banks, we got Juddy Clark, and we got Caleb Smith. They've all shown something at AFL level. Like, they're all likely to be best 22 players inside the next 2 or 3 years. So I think that set us up really well. Plus, we got McAuliffe, plus our draft hand this year as well. Like, we're really well set up. It's just the bookends really that we need sorted. The main thing is just that forward. We just need to get that one forward. And obviously that has to be a big priority this year. that has to be one of the biggest ones before this, before the Tassie side gets their draft concessions, because you know they're gonna, they'll be taking the best ones out of the pool in a couple of years.
I mean, Xavier, losing hurts. Losing sucks. I hate it. But then at the end of it, I console myself going, okay, we got beaten. Just keeps us in line for a number one or number two pick. Yeah. We get rewarded for it.
Yeah, I mean, I look at it and, like, if you had told me at the end of 2016 that we'd win another wooden spoon, you know, 9 years later, but in between then we'd win three flags, you'd take it every day of the week. You would take that every single day of the week. Poor St Kilda fans have won 26 wooden spoons and only seen one flag. Like, I'd rather the one flag, the one wooden spoon and three flags in a decade than, you know, three wooden spoons North Melbourne. Like,
West Coast, remember West Coast bottomed out after making a prelim, got a couple of nice picks and shot back up not that long ago. So I'll read out a couple from Facebook. Travis Frost. Now, hear me out. The umpires love us. Controversial, Travis. Not sure we can get any agreements on that one.
definitely not a Tigers fan.
Uh-huh. Tell you what, the amount of people, non-Richmond people, who legitimately think that we get looked after, even though I've presented them with the current freaking differential chart, is staggering. It blows my mind when I read comments like, oh, no, you always get looked after. It's like, are you reading what we're reading?
Although, to be fair, a lot of flogs like that think that they've had a hard run and they've won the freak count by five or six. Colton.
And saw an earlier tweet too, someone saying Daniel Rioli going back to WA. No, mate. No.
No. Next one I'll read out from Elizabeth Marsh. Now, hear me out. Dusty ain't leaving. With five love heart emojis. A lot of people got around that one from Elizabeth. I think you bang on there. I don't think Dusty is going. I think everything we saw after his 300th speaks volumes about what he thinks of the club. The only place he'll be going is into retirement if it's not playing for us next year. So very, very confident and comfortable with that one.
Hey, can we do something about Jason Prime? He's a dickhead. Just get rid of him. Yeah. He's just trolling people.
Dusty's going nowhere and Rioli...
Bye-bye, Jason.
Like a 5% chance he leaves.
All right.
Get rid of him. Just
I'll work on that momentarily.
Yeah.
The last one we'll read out from Andrew Cullen. Now, hear me out. McAuliffe has to start on field and Lynch should be rested for the rest of the year. Well, we may not have a choice on that part now. Along with other injury-prone players like Hopper and Prestia. In particular, the McAuliffe one. You are bang on the money there, Andrew. I was a little bit bummed that he was sub again, and it's going to be interesting to see what happens this week because, typically if you sub 2 weeks in a row, you've kind of got to play a full game, whether it's at VFL level or AFL level. But I'm all for McAuliffe getting bulk minutes. Get his match fitness up, lads.
100%. He has to play. He's our number one midfielder going forward for the next decade. Like, you know, Taranto and Hopper are 26, 27. They're not going to be around 5-6 years, especially with the way their injuries are happening. So, again, we're going to be in the same situation in 3 or 4 years' time like we are now with Koch going. Like, we need to start getting games into these younger midfielders.
Well, that probably goes the other side too. When you talk about putting Rioli, who's going to Western Australia, but we need maybe... The solution is maybe he doesn't go into the midfield, maybe just McAuliffe comes into the midfield. But having said that, they are managing McAuliffe's minutes because he has looked gassed a couple of times in games. But I agree, lads, he's either getting a full game in the VFL or he needs to actually get some more minutes in AFL.
AFL minutes.
I'd rather McAuliffe come in and have someone like Banks start a finishes sub with pace. Because McAuliffe may only run out 2.5 quarters. But what he can do in that 2.5 quarters is much better than what Uze's been doing than waiting for until 10 minutes to go in a game to activate a sub. He's been using the sub far too late. Like, I'd much rather McAuliffe start and have someone with pace who can actually do genuine damage when the game slowed down than what he's doing now with McAuliffe.
So I'll go this way. Given our spate of hamstring injuries, we can't even defeat the bye without doing a hamstring. Would you not use the sub thing for, say, Jacob Hopper or Dion Prestia? Would you not maybe put McAuliffe on for 2.5 quarters? And then if you've got a guy with a suspect hammy like a Prestia or someone in, put in one of those guys to get some valuable minutes in and manage them back to full time.
That could be the go, especially because Prestia is not going to run a full game out. So easing him in to, let's say, play the last 45 minutes, so the last quarter and a bit, and then slowly ease him in that way, probably a good idea as well.
Imagine Prestia coming on, or Hopper, with 45, they're fresh, the game's opened up, players are a bit tired. Imagine the damage those guys will do. They'll just tear them apart and not tear their hamstrings apart in the process.
Yeah.
Yeah, not a bad shout. I don't mind that. Oh, the last one, yeah, was this from Noel? I'm with you, Noel. I can't believe that people were cracking the shits because Uze was at the Melbourne and Kangas game because he was supporting his buddy's son playing his first game. Even if that part of the event didn't take place, even if he wasn't there to watch a friend's son play, why can't he go watch a game of football? I don't understand why anyone would have an issue with that. That's truly mind-boggling, let alone the connection he has with the D's and a friend's son playing his first game. If anyone questions that, they are just batshit crazy.
Again, mountains out of molehills. Like, the connection that he has at that club as a player, as a staff member, he would have spent easy 25 years at that club throughout his life. So essentially 50% of his life he would have been at that club. Why isn't he allowed to go sit there and enjoy watching a team that he's obviously pretty passionate about, who's got a long history with, and support, you know, friends and close friends? I see no issue.
This crazy outraged society that we live in is just chock full of keyboard warrior dickheads. And I'm so over this constant outrage and generating clicks and people, little attention whores, look at me. I mean, grow up. You've got to be a dead set moron to think that that's an issue. Absolute moron. And that's all I'll say. Social media is just trash.
He was in the stands. It's not like he was in the middle of the huddle after they won.
He wasn't holding up the coach's board for him.
Did he have the whiteboard in his hands moving the magnets?
Running out to – he was the runner after the whole Reece Conker thing.
Oh, crazy shit. All right, well, with that said, let's take a look at – we've got the Blues coming up this week, and it's a scary prospect, as much as it pains me to say it. Carlton are flying at the moment, sitting second on the ladder. Mackay and Kerno are causing teams all sorts of issues. Cripps and Dow doing good things.
Sorry, you said Mackay and Kerno. Don't you mean the umpires?
Oh, yes. Well, they have kicked the most goals as a result from free kicks this year, so that's an interesting stat. And Jacob Wiedering is obviously a very, very pivotal part to their back line, and Mitch McGovern for that matter. We'll start off with our ins and outs, because CB, I think you're about to set the house on fire with the ins and outs.
You've
got to start with that. You've got to start with
it. Hear me out. Okay. The only reason I'm suggesting this is because we actually need to get some firepower to kick a score, because there's been far too many games. We haven't even breached the 50-point mark. So we need to do something. And I'm just thinking it gives us a chance. Jacob Blight, bring him in. He's on a 6-month contract. By all accounts, he's ready made. He's ready to go. Fremantle was spewing, and their supporters were spewing to pick this kid up. So obviously, we weren't the only ones that raided him. And sorry, guys, as much as it goes against everything I've said, I'm going to have to move Bolter back forward just to give Kaczynski some support so we can actually try and kick a score. That's the only reason I'm saying it, because Blight, so Lynch out, Blight in. Sorry, Cumbo, you're out. Hopper in. And I'm not sure if Prestia's going to make it, or maybe Jack Graham, if he's got some tightness, Graham out, Prestia in. There you go. But there is logic to why I'm saying what I'm saying. We need to try and kick a score, and I think Bolters, they're going to concede goals anyway the other way with that ball coming out of the middle. We need to actually have something to aim at down the line.
Oh, this is good if David Harris is right. The Blight's on 18-month contract. That makes me feel a bit better about it all. I'd still be playing him, though, nonetheless. I'd still be playing him.
I believe both of our rookies had the 18-month. contract because they can opt for a 6 month or 12 or 18 month. I believe both opted for 18 month contracts. I see what you're saying, but against Kerno, McKay, and the absolute armchair ride that they're going to be given, I think that we need to keep Bolter down back. Bolter and Miller obviously are our two pillars.
How dare you have a different opinion?
Now, hear me out. I do think like Bolter and Miller are the two best matchups we have for Kerno and McKay. Like they're gonna, no matter who plays on them, I think they're gonna get absolutely monstered. And a first game is gonna get absolutely reamed by the umpires and everything for every little infringement that he makes. You know, this whole no namer as opposed to the superstars of the comp. So again, it's one of those ones where I wish we had three Bolter.
Yeah.
Like,
who's gonna get, yeah.
Like, it's just. Yeah, I think we're a better side with Bolter down back than we will be if Bolter goes up forward.
I
think we do need that 5,000.
I reckon the Lynch out. I'm siding with CB that we've got no other avenue to score. Yes. If Lynch plays, then I can understand leaving Bolter back. He's probably going to end up playing down there at some point anyway. If we're being realistic.
Yeah.
I just can't see how we just won't have a target to kick to because Gazinski will again have to play the number one role, which he can't do. It's not his job to do it. Samson Ryan, he's going to get absolutely destroyed by Wiedering McGovern. It needs to be a powerful unit to at least give us half a chance to bring the ball to the ground. That or to Kylie's point, which isn't necessarily the worst idea. I wouldn't care if we kick the ball along the ground inside 50 this week with the players we've got out just to try and lock it in there. Don't even put it in the air. Don't even give Wiedering or McGovern a chance.
100%. Wiedering, McGovern, Young is the other one. Like, they all tear us. And then, of course, you've got De Koning, who's an aerial threat, who's been absolutely tearing it up the last couple of weeks. 100%. Like, they're scary all over the park.
And Trezise, I'm with you, Nick. From all the VFL stuff I've seen and read, that it sounds like that he's in a prime spot to come back in. He just needs some luck in terms of injury. Every time he comes in, he gets hurt. So Trezise could be a chance. What about a few people have floated it, and it's been met with some negative comments, but the prospect of Pickett coming in to do a tagging role, thoughts?
No. Pickett's no longer in my best 22, so yeah. I don't care about his 15 kids. Hugo's got the wing. K-Mac's got the other. Sorry, Marlon.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, who's he going to tag? Cripps? Like, there's no chance. Cripps is an inside bulk. He gets his own ball, and they're the types of players that you can't tag. The players who can go in, win their own ball in a contest, you cannot tag. It's why Gary Ablett was so good. It's why Swan was so good, why Dangerfield was so good. I mean, you got players like Dacos who wait for the outside ball, they're handy one-twos. Yeah, tag them all day long. Cochin in his early... You know, back in the early days after, you know, he won the Brownlow where he'd go back to half back and get those cheaps. I mean, I'll admit it, he did. He got tagged out of the game. Deledio, very much the same. Like, you cannot tag players who are contested and can win their own ball. So the only player that I can really say pick it to tag is probably Walsh. But again, Walsh can win his own ball if he wants to, not that he wants to very often, but... Walsh is the only one that you'd put him in, and even then, Walsh is too quick for him. I wouldn't, yeah.
What about a few people putting Bauer's name in there? So the last I was under the impression was that he was kind of still working his way back up to match fitness. Is that been and gone? Is he now at a point in time where he can come back in? Because I would think that he would slot in, actually, to be fair.
I'm pretty sure he's decently match fit. A lot of the stuff he was away for was personal reasons, wasn't so much injury. Yeah. So, I mean, he would have been doing the conditioning side of things. So there's every chance that he comes in this week, especially with Lynch out. If we do want to keep Bolter down back, could be Cozzy and Bauer up forward.
Could be. Oh, welcome, Ross. Hope you're doing well. Feel free
to... Big End Studio there.
Yeah.
Whatever's involved with him.
Yeah, I did send your lads a message today. Yeah, hopefully we can see some stuff soon, but I hope you're doing well, Ross.
I'll take a free AFL game or cricket game, Ross.
If Seconta tags any of our players, surely he's got better things to do than to tag. So I know it's probably just a learning for him, but yeah, that's not going to be much fun. Because to be fair, he did a super job on Tom Stewart the other week. But I'm in the bow coming back in camp if he's fit to go. It's one of those things, isn't it, Grok, that we all want him to come back in, but then we're also very critical of the fitness staff of playing players who aren't ready. So we don't want to get that wrong and then play him and he all of a sudden does his hamstring or something in the first 25 minutes. So
I think with Bauer, though, it's not like he's had a repeated history of the injuries as opposed to Graham, Prestia, Lynch. But again, it's just we've got so many players who are versatile and can play either end of the ground, and that's where we've sort of shot ourselves in the foot a little bit, where we've sort of draft Bauer as the forward. He's played a few games there. Then we've swung him down back and he's looked really good there. It's like we sort of robbed Peter to pay Paul in one respect. And now we've got so many defenders who can go forward, but we don't really have any main target forwards. Swiftly with Fawcett, he's had stress fractures in his back. So we'll be lucky to see him at VFL level this year. It's virtually a write-off for him this year.
What about Campbell Gray?
Yeah, just on the VFL, snack pack again.
Now, tore it up. I might have missed something along the way here. Where's snack pack come from? What have I missed?
Don't know. Let's go on snack pack.
Can anyone shed light on that? Because every time I read it, I'm trying to decipher and work out why. So if someone could shed light on why Hayes Brown's called snack pack, that'd be fantastic. But he seems to be doing okay. I'm not sure. I don't think he'll be in line for game time this year, do you think? Probably not.
No, probably not. I think with Hayes Brown, it's because of the initials OHB, HSP, sort of right, the three. Right.
I mean, it's
a stretch. At least that's some of the reasoning that I saw on Big Footy. But right. Yeah, if it is, like, yeah.
Okay. See, it sounds like HSP. All right, fair enough. Okay, anyway, realistically, it's a long shot that we're going to beat Carlton because they're in flying form. But if we were to give ourselves half a chance, how are we going to do it? Because De Koning looked seriously impressive in the ruck on the weekend. My fear is he's going to have a bit too much athleticism for Nank. Nank will be able to hold his own maybe around the ground stuff. But, yeah, how do we break even in the midfield, lads? That's going to be the starting point for this. CB's just shaking his head.
Unfortunately, we're hitting them at the wrong time and it's not going to be pretty. And that's the price you pay for success, right? We've had a good run and now they've got some big bulls in that midfield and they've got some big bulls up the forward line. They've got some big bulls in the back. They're going to be too big and strong for us, guys. It's just going to happen.
I think the only way that we match them in the midfield is if we completely forego trying to win the clearance ourselves, because let's be real, with our midfield the way it is right now, coming up against Walsh, Cripps, Hollands, like, it's not going to go well for us. We've seen what Dow does against the bigger mids and against, you know, Gold Coast and everything like that. It got absolutely battered. So what I think we need to do is set up defensively in the contest, allow them to get to the contest first, and then just try and wrap them up. Try and force repeated stoppages, because, I mean, head-to-head coming up against, like, in a contest, who's going to win is probably an 80-20 Carlton win. So I think, again, just try and win. Pray for the holding the balls. Let them get first. Exploit the wall. But the thing that concerns me is their back line. Like, Wiedering, Young, and McGovern, they're the three. Like, we just need to be accountable. We need to bring it to ground. Or kick it along the ground,
one of the two.
Yeah. Ross Simmons just made the mention that Sarah looks like coming in. Well, that's one position we'll win because that guy's as soft as butter, mate. So that's one position we'll win wherever he plays. He's soft. But anyway, go on.
Yeah, I'm with David here. I think our best hope is for it to piss down torrentially with rain so that their key forwards can't take a solid mark. Because it won't matter for us because we won't have any forwards down there to take a mark ourselves. But yeah, hope for lightning strikes as Carroll.
What's the freeze for the arm chops or the holding knife at Reigns?
Unfortunately, the one thing Hawthorne did was they covered the middle of the ground really well and forced us to go down the line.
They did,
and we had no solutions to that. And I've just got the same fear. Carlton will do the same. They're going to own the middle, force us down the line, and it's just going to keep coming back in and in and in. That's what really scares the shit out of me, to be honest.
So realistically, what are we hoping to get out of this? What do we think? I won't say pass mark because losing is not really a pass in anyone's book. But what do we think would be an acceptable or reasonable outcome for this? Because we're not going to win. But are we saying if we can keep it to within 30 to 40 points, is that somewhat okay? I really don't know. I do fear for how it's going to pan out though.
Yeah, 30 points. If we can keep it under 5 goals, or if we can be within, let's say, 2 goals at 3-quarter time, and then say we get blown out by 8 or 9, I still wouldn't call that bad. It's as long as we can match them for 75% of the game, and no injuries, most importantly.
It's a very good call. Well, what about Big Campbell Gray? Is there a chance CB to come in play forward?
Nah, not at this. Not ahead of Samson Ryan, I would have thought.
Fair enough. All right, let's get some tips, including margins. People are already dropping into the chat. CB, what's your final gut feel here?
I think this will help us secure pick one.
Say no more.
Right. Look, I think the Blues will unfortunately get us by about 35 to 45 points. They're just flying at the moment. There's just too much on the line for them to not want to keep winning. We've got no one to kick it to. We've got no forward line, so we're in a world of hurt. But anyway, it is what it is. Look, the silver lining is all of these injuries do present opportunities to other players that we maybe wouldn't have seen otherwise. So encourage people to enjoy watching the youngsters play. We can get to learn a bit more about them and what they've got and what they have to offer for next year. And I think that's what Uzo will be looking out for as well. Like, what can he hold on to and work on for next year as well? But Aaron, that's not a bad shout to drop by all the time. Carlton by 823 points, Travis. That's very generous. Carlton by 52. It is what it is. Just enjoy the ride. Enjoy seeing the youngsters play. Richo, any trade goss? We mentioned earlier that I suppose there's been a lot of media speculation about Baker and Bolton going to clubs in Perth, but I'm of the view of that with how many cameras there are these days on mobile phones, that if there's no photo evidence, then maybe it didn't happen. Maybe it's just Bolton was 100% in Perth. He was doing some function work. Doesn't mean he went to the footy clubs, though. I think there was a bit of putting one to one together and maybe getting three. But yeah, even as early as today, Tigg still believes that Baker will be staying. And I know a few people mentioned last week they heard about Nank wanting to pass over the captaincy to him and things like that. And Bolton, well, he's contracted till 2027. So if anyone wants him, you've got to pay up. So unless it's a super-duper offer, I think the club might be inclined to say thanks, but no thanks.
And keep in mind, too, the other one was Grok said we were going to get Harley Reid for picks 71, 69, and 55 from West Coast, right? So stay tuned for that one.
RFC Centre, no last-minute trade costs. Obviously, trades and everything right now are in limbo with the AFL still deciding what to do with the trade rules in regards to picks and points value, draft index, that whole clusterfuck as it is right now. There's nothing in the pipeline. Obviously, we'd spent a lot of time planning to use the picks to upgrade. Obviously, Carlton, Brisbane, Gold Coast, they need picks for points. So we're still waiting to see how that pans out. I'm not sure if it's the lack of sleep that I've had or what, but there's a small part of my stomach that feels like we're a sneaky chance this week.
Oof.
Yeah.
If we're going to win one more for the year, please let this one be it. Yeah. I don't know how we'll do it without a key forward, but just let it happen.
Yeah. But I still expect Carlton to win, but there's this that sneaking little gut feel that that will be a chance.
The other thing as well, folks, if you do want to get some small amount of satisfaction out of the week of football, just keep an eye on Geelong's ladder position, because they might just slip outside the eight after this week if they lose to Essendon. So that could put a smile on people's faces.
That's been the one saving grace of my season this year, is just seeing that slide and just seeing the gradually happy, smiling faces on the bus every morning slowly turn into the scowls, head down, and they're buried in their phones on trains and everything. Ross, any news on protein? Well, 28th of June, I hear. I hear it could be out by the end of the week.
It could be.
I'll just say
Port 2. Good call by Jane Racing. Port 2, they're after a chance to drop out as well. I think they're cooked.
I'll say two things. A, shit form by Port Adelaide, how they're treating Kenny Hinckley. By all accounts, he's a first-class bloke. So probably have a look at yourselves there. And I hope Tasmania's talking to Ken Hinckley to get him in a football manager position or something. He deserves better.
I reckon they're getting bucks.
And the other one was, who was it? On Geelong. Actually was shit ass that the way that Tom Hawkins, who has been a very, very good footballer over the journey, how he went down. That's actually really, really bad.
Yep.
So I hope he's okay there. Like, just no one touched him, went down the shot. But yeah, he does finish on 796 goals, four short of Richo. So there is a bit of a silver lining for us in that one.
I do hope, I know we get stuck into the Cats every now and then, but for his sake, I know people have got their thoughts about him with the Soldo incident, whatever. But I do hope he does or is able to get back, if this is his last year, to, you know, play out some games to have a proper send-off, kind of like what Dusty and Jack and Koch did, because he's been a pretty good servant of the game, no matter what we were supposed to think about that certain incident. So hopefully, yeah, it was shit-ass to see him go down like that. Like, that was one of those times where you expected him to have been bumped or knocked or something like that. But no, I don't like injuries to any player, to be honest.
You guys have been too polite here. You guys have been far too polite.
If it was Tom Stewart, on the other hand, I wouldn't have maybe had so many
I think it's kind of ironic that if that's the way that Tom Hawkins has gone out, he's gone down with no contact, given how he's played his career.
Kitty cat, want a saucer of milk?
I mean, I won't say how I really feel, but yeah.
Oh, there we go. Gail liked the interview of Hinckley and may go to Taz.
Good. I hope he goes. I hope he gets there.
Very good. Very good. All right. Thank you for joining us tonight, Jens, Grok, and CB. Thank you so much for your time. Thank you to everyone for tuning in tonight. Much appreciated. Make sure you give a follow on YouTube, on Facebook, on Twitter, wherever you're watching from. And we will be back on Monday, hopefully with a win or some good news to talk about. I'm not so confident on that, but... Teague should be back next week as well, so there might be some further updates on the trade front there potentially. We'll see how we go. But otherwise, have a good weekend. Enjoy the football, and until next time, go Tigers.
Go Tigers.
Go Tigers. Tigers by 15 goals. Come on.
Oh, I like it.